This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan. It was World Refugee Day yesterday. World Refugee Day is observed on the 20th of June each year to celebrate the strength and courage of people who have been forced to flee their home country or to escape conflict or persecution. And the theme of World Refugee Day 2021 is Together We Heal, Learn and Shine. In light of that, my guest on today's show is a refugee from Pakistan. Her name is Sabah Ahmed, and Sabah is also an administrator and caseworker at the Refugee Emergency Fund Malaysia, REF. Welcome to the show, Sabah. How are you doing?
Thank you so much, Darshan, for having me. I'm doing fine.
All right.
Thanks for having me for today.
The honor is mine. Thanks for coming on the show. Now, Sabah, let's start at the beginning. How old were you when you left Pakistan? And also, why did you decide to leave?
Actually, I was 17 when I came here. I was turning 17, running 16. So it was not my decision. It was up to my parents. We belong to a minority group in Pakistan. It's called Ahmadi community. So I'm an Ahmadi Muslim, but we are constitutionally, we are included minority in Pakistan.
Right.
And according to our constitution, we are not to perform any religious activities in public. We can't have Muslim names. We can't pray in mosques. And also constitutionally, we don't have a right to vote or have any political activity. Apart from that, in almost all cities of Pakistan, there is high persecution of Ahmadis, which when I say persecution, it means there is killing of Ahmadis, maybe in daylight.
Right.
So that was the reason my family flew from Pakistan.
So why did y'all choose Malaysia specifically?
All right. We did not choose Malaysia. It was, we just wanted to fly from our country.
Right.
Because as I said, it was not my decision. My family just wanted to go somewhere safe. Mm-hmm. And Malaysia was very approachable for us because we were not really able to get visa for maybe America or Europe. And Malaysia was open to tourist visa. We came to Malaysia legally, actually.
Okay.
We came on a tourist visa. It was for 1 month. So we remained here legally for 1 month. But after that, our visa was expired. And we did apply for UNHCR to get our refugee status.
Okay. Now, what happened after you came to a decision to leave Pakistan? You said your family decided, okay, it's time to leave. But why was it at that specific moment? Why leave when you were 17 years old as compared to when you were 15 or 10? Was there anything significant that happened on that year?
Yes. Actually, my father used to work as a merchant, mm-hmm. and our shop was burned. So this happens that once every 2 years or 3 years, there will be like high persecution covering media. Then there will be like a fire among people.
Right.
So one incident comes in media, for example. So now everybody knows. So if it has taken place in Lahore, so the people of Peshawar or the people of, let's say, other cities, they will be seeing it too. So they want to do the same riots in their own cities. Pakistan has a lot of sects. We have Shias, Sunnis, Wahhabis, Al-Hadis. We have a lot of sects and they all have their own religious leaders. And that's why we have our own conflicts. We are a Muslim country, but then our religious scholars are the ones who are exploiting our nation. And that's why we have honor killing. We have Shias persecution.
Right.
And we don't really have laws against it. Even honor killing can go away easily. So the year we came, there was a lot of killings in my cities, in my city especially. And people were threatening my family. I mean, we were only one family, Ahmadi family, in my whole area. And all others were Sunnis and Wahhabis. So when our shop burned down, my father didn't have any business anymore. And we didn't know where else to go. So we already saw that there were a lot of other Ahmadis who were fleeing from the country. They were selling their businesses and they didn't want to live there anymore. And as my father didn't have any business yet, if we leave the country, if we leave our city and move to another city, then also we had to start our life from scratch.
Right.
So that's why my father decided that we should leave the country now.
Hmm. So you mentioned that, you know, y'all came on tourist visa. So I'm assuming, you know, on that front, it was pretty smooth in the sense that your travel, you just took a plane like any other tourist, came to Malaysia. What happened once you arrived here? Was there anyone waiting to receive you? Did you already have friends or family in Malaysia that have left maybe years before? Or were y'all pretty much on your own?
We do have an Ahmadi community here. There are around 5,000 Ahmadi refugees here. So who are from Pakistan, also some of other countries. But there was no one waiting for us here. We had to go to our mosque, which is also called as our center. So we went to our center first, and it was also not easy for us because we were new to the country. We didn't know the rules. We knew nothing. So we just waited there for like 3 to 4 hours so that someone can come, someone who speaks Urdu. And so the person who met us there, they connected us to this Pakistani host family who hosted us for like 28 days.
Right.
So we stayed there for 28 days and then gradually we started to grasp that what's going on. I was like an egg, how to say, a hatched egg who was just coming out of the shell. I don't really know what was going on, you know. Mm-hmm. It was really new experiences for me. So I was just observing my elder, my parents of doing things, buying things, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we were hosted, but we also had to pay them. So there was nothing for like free for us. We were just from very first day, we were like living properly here. We were not hosted as a guest. We were expected to pay. We were expected to be treated like any other refugee who has been living in Malaysia.
And so was money and things like that an issue for y'all?
As I said, my father was a merchant.
Right.
In the beginning, it was not an issue because we had to sell our house. We sold our, because there was no business left.
Right.
So we just had our house and my father had savings. But to keep in mind, my family was 7 members. So when we sold everything, we paid everything on our flights and our tickets. So we can assume that not much money was left with us. So beginning maybe 3 months or 3 to 6 months, we were okay. But we also had to find job because savings can't last forever, right?
Yep.
So yeah, we were okay for the beginning of the months. But after that, we were seeing worry coming to us. Yeah.
Okay. And as the days started to go by, did y'all feel a sense of worry or a sense of concern that now that your tourist visa is already winding down, it's going to expire? So what next for y'all? Where do y'all go from here? How do y'all get the UNHCR card and things like that? Were all these things going through your mind?
Absolutely, absolutely. So when we came here, I did some research on Google that what happens to refugees in Malaysia, but they were not straight answers. They were like dreamy answers on Google.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the answers were of refugees that were living in Europe or America. They were much, much better. So we had this bubble of expectations that we might be having education, we will be having jobs. And that's what everybody in Pakistan knows, the families whose other family members have been living in Malaysia. Right. Nobody really tell the truth that what's happening in to refugees here. Are they legally able to get their basic rights? So we were also in a bubble of expectations. So when we came here, everything, like each one of our bubble was popping. I was not ready that I won't be able to get education legally here, or my father won't be able to work here. After 1 week of living with those hosts, we almost came across to everything what's happening here, because there were other Ahmadi refugees who were coming to us, who were telling us what, I don't want to bring big stories, but they were telling us that we are illegal. Immigration can take us. So everybody was scaring us. Like there was a fear, a cloud of fear on our heads that we cannot walk outside the house also. This was the fear on my head for like 3 months. I only walked to like big supermarket, and I used to look right and left that, oh, immigration is going to catch me. This on my head. Right. Because it was all fake news, and it's so much fear in that area where I was living in. So as I said earlier, it was news to us, right? Mm-hmm. So after 3 days since we arrived to Malaysia, we went to the office of UNHCR. The process is very difficult. We stayed there from morning 8 a.m. till 11 p.m. just to get our turn. So there is no sitting area there outside UNHCR. You have to stand in lines, very long lines. And people stand there since morning 3 a.m. so that they can get their turn earlier than other people. Mm-hmm. So when we stay there, the people will be like 300 to 400 people standing on the sideways of the road. So when I saw, I was like, what is happening here? What is going on here? So the other security guard, he just hushed us to the other side of the road that there is not enough space. So we had to wait under the tree until 12 p.m. of the afternoon without having food or water. And after that, we had to again stand in the line. And I remember the first day we came back from morning 8 a.m. until it closed, which is, I think, 5 p.m. And at that day, we got just a blue card, which is called an appointment card. Mm-hmm. This appointment card basically gives you an appointment date that you will be allowed inside UNHCR just to hear your story. It's not guarantees you to give you UN card or UN letter. Right. It's just that you will get your chance to tell your story to them. We came here in 2017. Mm-hmm. So we got a date of 2019 at that time. But because our case was in urgent cases, so we got our date same year, December.
Okay.
And we were really lucky enough to get our UN card 6 months later.
On the show with me today is Saba Ahmed, a Pakistani refugee and an administrator and caseworker at the Refugee Emergency Fund Malaysia. She's sharing her story and experiences as a refugee in Malaysia. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan. And in light of World Refugee Day yesterday, I have on the show with me Saba Ahmed, a Pakistani refugee and an administrator and caseworker at the Refugee Emergency Fund Malaysia. And she's sharing her story and experiences as a refugee in Malaysia. Now, Saba, you alluded to it earlier about the picture that people paint when you are still in Pakistan. You know, when you come to Malaysia, you can get education, you can get healthcare. Once you arrived in Malaysia, was it easy for you and your family to get access to healthcare?
Not at all. The thing is, we do not have awareness that is on behalf of UNHCR. They are not really efficient in providing sufficient healthcare to their. I mean, they might be trying their best, but that is not sufficient on their behalf also. So when we come here, they do not give us any brochures or any any phone numbers that we can contact, that these are the clinics you can go to. So this type of information we had to find on ourselves. We had to ask other refugees that where are clinics? Can we go to normal clinics? So this information should be provided to us by UNHCR, but they failed to do so. So the second thing is there is a lot of some clinics who are Malaysian clinics,
right,
but they do allow refugees to have treatment with discount, such as Qualitas Clinic. And also government hospitals, they allow to have 50% discount to refugees who have UN card or UN letter. But when we talk about the clinics that are related with UNHCR, so there is not enough tickets for refugees. For there also, you have to go really early in the morning to just have your turn. They will give you token, and then you have to wait in the same long lines, and you have to wait for the process to take place. So my very first experience was the Zushi Clinic. And we had to stand there for maybe 2 hours just to wait for our turn. And then token is only given to first 100 refugees. And first 100, or sometimes the quota is less than 50. It depends on the day and the casualties. So then we have to wait, God knows, for so many hours. Then we can get medicine, which is free in these clinics.
You've been here for 5 years already. So healthcare wasn't easy. Education isn't easy as well. So how then did you fend for yourself? Did you manage to get an education over the past 5 years? What was that journey like, progressing over the past 5 years in Malaysia?
I have learned one thing in 5 years, that when you become a refugee, the days of your struggle starts, and you don't know when it's going to finish or when it's going to come to an end. So I have not seen anything has come to me without a struggle. I have, no matter if it's work, no matter if it's education or healthcare, everything you have to struggle and run to get your number. You have to get yourself in that line, wait for 2 hours and get your token to get your medicine, right? Mm-hmm. So for education also, it's just like that. It's just like any other hospital, just like getting your UN card, or I would say even harder than that. Because firstly, we are not allowed to study in Malaysian schools, government right. schools or private schools. We are not allowed to. Secondly, there are refugee schools, but then their schools also have limited amount of students. I mean, they will only have 10 or 20 students in this one class. So I had to study in a school which was only for Sri Lankan refugees. And the school was already very populated. So I had to struggle a lot to get into only that school. I must mention, there are other schools such as Dignity, which is really good for refugees.
Right.
But they will also have their quotas for students. So I was almost rejected from every refugee school, in my area. And they were telling me that I am too old for their school. I was 17, but they were telling me I'm too old, that you should be getting in other schools. So this gave me a sense of insecurity, that am I getting old? Should I stop trying?
Right.
But long story short, I did not stop. Actually, I finished my O-levels in Malaysia.
Wow.
Yes. For that, also, I had to struggle a lot because money was a problem. When we come to Pakistan, of course, our currency is very little compared to Malaysian currency. So we had to convert, and it got used up so fast, even though it's a lot amount of money. But when we convert it, it's just penny. So I had to work like a part time. I was doing babysitting for my neighbors, and that money I was using to pay at my refugee school. So these refugee schools are also not free. You have to pay there. And these are the struggles that every refugee is teenager is suffering, because first they will not get into a school, even though there are refugee schools, there is not enough quota for them. And secondly, once they reach to the highest level, because refugee schools are only until form three, maybe form four, not a lot, all of the refugee schools provide O-level education.
Right.
So I was lucky enough to get really good Malaysian volunteers who taught me in that school. I got into science subjects and I did my O-levels in really good grades.
I think that's absolutely fantastic. Despite, you know, everything being against you, the amount of challenges that you've had to go through, you managed to complete your O-levels. I think that's absolutely fantastic and congratulations on that. Now, why did you decide to join the Refugee Emergency Fund? Tell me about that decision to join REF, as well as what exactly REF does as an NGO.
All right. So Refugee Emergency Fund was founded in 2017 by a fellow refugee. His name is Hassan Al-Akra. He is also a refugee from Syria. And he founded this nonprofit because a lot of refugees were reaching him to raise funds for emergency hospital needs, such as they needed to do surgeries, or they needed to do their parents were sick, their very small children were sick. And surprisingly, many kind Malaysians were donating a lot of money for the cause of refugees. So this response was really good. And Hassan decided to form this as officially as an organization, which he named as Refugee Emergency Fund, because he started raising funds for emergency cases. And now, at the moment, after 3 years, Refugee Emergency Fund has been raising funds for not only medical cases, but also for rental cases, for food and essential cases, and as well as for education cases. But the majority is for our medical and rental cases, because due to this pandemic, we almost had around 200 plus cases so far, which was for a rental, because refugees also have lost their jobs, has lost their income, and they needed to pay their rents,
right?
And for our medical cases, we also get cancer cases, like refugees who are suffering from cancer. So if we receive such cases, then we will do emergency funding online, and we try our best that we can cover most of the amount, but Refugee Emergency Fund pays as much as possible so that the treatment can start undergoing. Apart from that, my job at Refugee Emergency Fund is to administrate all the cases that are coming in. So I will be looking at the cases and confirming and investigating them at first. So I have direct contact with leaders of our refugee communities. So I have to investigate that if these cases are legit or true or not, because if we do not do so, then the rightful cases might be ignored. So this step is very important. Apart from that, I also take care of the cases which are in progress, and with the payments, if the payments has to be done at hospitals, so I'll go there and pay the beneficiaries. And apart from that, I also work as a caseworker, which means that many refugees come straight to me. They ask me to help them with these emergency cases, and then I will work as a caseworker for them in REF and ask for maybe funds which are needed for them. Yes, that is my work. When I came here, the very third day of when we went to UNHCR, there was a lady who was researching on refugees in Malaysia. She was from New Zealand.
Right.
So she was living here for 2.5 years. And she said this to us, that beggars are not choosers. Mm. And I remember this is imprinted in my mind since then, and it will be forever, that she was right, that refugees here do not have a choice. We are not obliged to have rightful education. Yeah. We can't work. We don't have a choice. So, but when I think that beggars are not choosers, I think she was telling us the reality. She was not taking it in a negative sense, but she was teaching us that what we are going to have and what we are going to experience. But then I use this sentence as my inspiration. I say that this beggar gets to choose.
Nice.
I choose that if I don't want to do anything, I want to just stay. But on the other hand, I choose to change this mindset, not for anybody else, but for myself, because refugees are not here to get anybody's job. Or I want to change this perspective, and I want to start this with myself.
Now, do you hope to stay in Malaysia long term, or are there plans to settle down in another country?
I really want to give you a positive answer for this, but living in Malaysia means that living without your right to higher education, living without your right to work in a good facility. I love Malaysia. I love Malaysian food and the people, but I also want to live somewhere that gives me legal status, where I can also be called a citizen. So I really wish that I'm resettled to a country where I can be called a citizen. Because if I live in Malaysia, no matter if I live for 10 years, I live 50 years, I won't be called Malaysian. I won't be given a legal status. I will be a refugee. So to answer your question, my hopes are that my family can get resettled. It's not that to get only opportunities, but it's just to have a normal life like every Malaysian is having. When we say that refugee wants to get resettled, they want to get into another country, but we forget that in what status they are living in Malaysia, they don't want like very high facilities for themselves, not luxury. They just want what everybody else have, like to have a right to travel and to have a right to have a bank account or to have a driving license. These are just small things that we want to have in our life, that we can have our right to have it. So that is why I don't want to live here forever, but at the same time, I do love living in Malaysia.
You talk about the access to healthcare earlier. What is the vaccine situation like in the refugee community, especially the communities that you actively engage with? Have the refugees been able to get the COVID-19 vaccination? What's the story like from the ground, Sabah?
All right. So I do know there are a few refugees, especially from older groups. Mm-hmm. The older citizens who are like suffering from some diseases like diabetes or some chronic diseases. I do know those refugees are getting vaccines. Yes. And those refugees who are living in high risk areas, my friend Hassan, he also got scheduled his vaccine on 8th July.
Okay.
But I think because I'm living in a low risk area, and that is the reason I have not been eligible yet in my Sajatra to be eligible for vaccine. But yes, I have heard that few refugees are getting the vaccines. It is a slow process, but yes, it's happening.
So there's no fear among the refugees that if you do show up to get vaccinated, you could be detained and deported. Is there that kind of worry or fear, at least from the people that you talk to?
Yes, there is. There always is. Because people always get this news from other refugee fellows that if you go there, it's a trap. It's a trap. You shouldn't go there. They don't want to vaccine you. They just want to take you, especially in Rohingyan refugees. They are really afraid to get vaccinated because it's happening. They get caught by immigration and their fellow refugees does. So this fear, they have like a permanent house in their hearts. So But we there from Asylum It Says, there has been many videos made in different languages that make awareness for refugees that you should sign up for My Sajatra, and this one is safe and you will be vaccinated. So these community leaders and many NGOs, they are trying their best to make best awareness for vaccination and that refugees must be vaccinated as well.
Now, what changes, Sabah, would you like to see the Malaysian government, whether it's this government, future governments, whoever the government is, make moving forward to ensure that refugees have better lives here?
We as refugees do not want really luxuries from, we do not expect a lot of things from Malaysian government. But what are the main concern is to have a safe access towards hospitals, towards healthcare and education. These are two main concerns that I have and with me thousands of refugees have, because I think just assume that if a Malaysian is going to another country, maybe Europe, or he will be looking, the number one thing, he'll be looking his healthcare and education of his children. And that's what every refugee is looking for. That's what every refugee is concerned for. So my only request to Malaysian government is to maybe provide more safe and direct access to refugees with education. I really hope that maybe one day refugees will have a right to study at just like any other child in Malaysia, because refugee children also have a right towards education and healthcare. I know there are a lot of hospitals that are giving discount, but still it's not enough, because not every refugee here is a refugee, because not every refugee has a UN card, and without UN card even hospitals do not give them 50% discount. And so these two are my request to Malaysian government to provide to every refugee, even though they have UN card or they do not have UN card.
All right, Sabah, before I let you go, told me earlier you have exams you need to get to as well, so I don't want to keep you for too long, but would you have a final message for us this World Refugee Day?
Yes, so for my Malaysian fellows, I will say that refugees are living within you. They are living maybe in your same building. They are living as your neighbors, but maybe you do not know. So my message for this World Refugee Day is to have awareness that refugees are living in Malaysia. Because when we ask most of the people, sometimes they do not know that Malaysia has refugees. And they will be saying, oh, are there refugees from Pakistan? Are there refugees from Sierra Leone? So I really want Malaysians to have more awareness. That is also the reason of that I came for this interview, that I want my fellow Malaysians to have awareness for refugees. And I think with this awareness, that more people know about refugees, and this might help take our voice to the government as well, so that the situation with refugees can have improvement. So make yourself aware with how refugees are living in Malaysia.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Sabah.
Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Sabah Ahmed, a Pakistani refugee and an administrator and caseworker at the Refugee Emergency Fund Malaysia. And she was sharing her story and experiences as a refugee in Malaysia. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.